This is the Division 2, Division 3 podcast.
Welcome to the 2019 season. We are here for another year of the Division 2, Division 3 podcast. I'm Matt Kinnear here at Inside the Cross, joined in the studio by Josh Davey. And representing the North, so we don't get too much into the Lynchburg-Salisbury discussion week to week, is Kyle Devitt.
I'm doing great. I missed the parade today, but I'm here.
Six rings. How you feeling?
I feel amazing. I feel amazing. I recorded a fun little snippet in the Crease podcast, which is also available on the Inside the Cross podcast feed. So you can check that out.
Well, down here in Baltimore, we're all depressed after watching another New England Super Bowl, but we've got Division III lacrosse to get us through it. Taking a quick look at Division II, though, one really key result from just a short slate of games here in this weekend zero is what we'll call it. Belmont Abbey beat Tampa. That's a top 10 matchup. I interviewed Coach Chris Barrett. You can listen to that later on in this podcast. But I think a game that a lot of people are talking about, one of the only D3 games this weekend, happened on Sunday. Salisbury 9, Barry 7. A lot of people were looking at this score and saying, what the heck happened? Kyle, you were watching it. We had a lively conversation on our Inside the Cross Slack going back and forth watching this game. Just give me your overall impressions. Salisbury 9, Barry 7.
Well, just the flow of the game. So Salisbury kind of takes a little while to score, but they go up 3-0 at the end of the first 15 minutes. And you're like, okay, that makes sense. It's a little low. Like, it looked like they could have gone up a little bit higher, right? They could have had 5 or 6 in the first quarter. And then I think it started when a Barry attackman ran across the entire half line and smashed into an easy clearing Salisbury midfielder who wasn't paying attention. Barry got the ball back, got a huge long possession, and then scored 2 goals. And it was kind of like, oh, all right, you got some life left in you. And then Salisbury scored a goal, and then Barry scored again. And you're kind of, you're like, wow, you scored right before halftime. Like, okay, you know, it's a close game. But you still kind of felt like Salisbury was going to pull away. And then I think the third period in particular, Barry just turned it on, man. They were great between the boxes. They were contesting every ball. They outshot Salisbury by a lot in that quarter. And it looked like Barry was ready to pull off the upset. If it weren't for, you know, Salisbury's goalie, Brandon Warren, who had 17 saves, Barry could have easily won this game. And I think people, you know, even if you're just looking at it by the stats, that will tell you a lot of the story. But again, I think it, and I said this previously when we briefly discussed it on the other podcast, is that I think Salisbury's talent won this game, and that's it. Because I think they got outworked and outplayed in almost every other aspect.
Yeah, Kyle, you know, we were talking on the Slack, and then I tuned in on my phone watching the live stream, and the thing that really struck me was just, you know, Barry was the aggressor in this team. You know, they seemed to be more physical. They asserted themselves. They were taking risks. You know, it's rare to see Salisbury kind of back on their heels and another team physically just kind of dominating them. That's what really stood out to me. You know, where was that killer seagull instinct that we're so used to? Josh, you had some comments on this game as well. Earlier we were talking about the stats in particular and how they were so even, but what's your take from this result?
Yeah, at first when I saw that it was a close game, I think Salisbury's up by half, by 1 or 2, I was like, oh, you know, they're just kind of slow. It's their first game. They're getting their feet wet. They'll pull away. And then when you look at the end of the game stats, you know, I'm imagining that Salisbury outshot them some crazy amount and Barry just converted at a really high percentage. But, I mean, ground balls were 38-36. Salisbury clears. Barry cleared at a higher percentage. Barry really struggled on the man up, going 1-for-6. Faceoffs were even. Barry, like Kyle said earlier, outshot them 44-41. Faceoffs are even. Barry had one more turnover. So when you look at sort of like the tail of the tape, this was a really even game. And if you took the Salisbury away and the Barry away, you would think this was like a Salisbury-York game or, you know, not a team like Barry. And I'll give Mike Gilbert on our IT staff here a lot of credit. He mentioned before this week that he's like, dude, Barry's legit. They were 12-5 last year. They lost to CNU by one, Colorado College by a couple. They had some good games. I think lost to Sewanee at one point. But, you know, they're an up-and-coming program from the Georgia area. You know, it's the first game this season. I don't know how much stock that holds in terms of Salisbury moving forward. But they made a lot of mistakes, for sure, and as any team is going to in the first week. And a Jim Berkman coach team is going to get better on a week-to-week basis. But I don't remember ever Salisbury starting out this slow. And you talked about the physical nature of it. Not having Will Nowesnik and Tucker back there on defense, who sort of were the tone setters for them for the past 4 years, I think is a huge hole. We knew it was a huge hole, but I don't think we realized how difficult that's going to be overcome. And without that one guy, Corey Gwynn, sort of being, you know, that main guy, he doesn't have as much support, or not names that we're as familiar with. So it's going to be interesting moving forward. You got to give Barry a lot of credit, because I think it wasn't as much as Salisbury played really bad as it was, I think Barry's a legit team.
And I want to talk more about what this means for Salisbury going forward. But Kyle, you know, Barry is, like Josh said, it's not like this is some program that's, you know, this really bad lacrosse program that, you know, Salisbury should have killed. Obviously, I think we all think Salisbury should have won this game a little more handily when you talk about the talent. But Barry's a good program, and they're well coached. Kyle, you know quite a bit about this team. What can you tell us about the way that they're coached?
Yeah, so the coach of Barry was actually the coach at New England College and coached my brother for, I think, at least three of his 4 years. And NEC is actually in my hometown of Henniker, New Hampshire. I saw a bunch of games. You know, they play like in this game, what was kind of different from what I expect from a Gilbert coach team is that they didn't play a ton of guys. He usually has like a nice stable that he runs through, especially in the midfield. He's very good at midfield substitutions, keeping guys fresh, and going at you the whole time. That's kind of his hallmark as a coach, is he wants a team that's going to go as hard as they can. And listen, this team went real hard, and they really should have done better on man up. If I'm going to critique anything, it's their man, and their man up didn't look organized. And I think that's why they didn't score. But again, everything else I said held true earlier when you're talking about how the team plays man to man in the middle of the field, bumping guys off the ball, fighting for every single inch of the field, not just acquiescing to a ground ball, but actually going into it and fighting for every single inch. And that is something that you can't discount, you know, especially at the Division III level. I think one of the things that's the most important about that particular kind of section of lacrosse is if you're good off the ground, you're going to score goals, because that's going to get you into good spots. The athleticism to run past the first defender is almost more important in D3, because the slide is, let's face it, a lot of the times late compared to Division 1. I think that's one of the main kind of, if you're going to detract from it, I don't think it's a detraction. I think it's just a fact of having slower players and less organized defenses in general. But that's one of the things that Barry is really good at. And we saw that against Salisbury is that physicality. They were not scared. You know, this team was not scared of Salisbury, not scared of the sweater clad glow, which most people are. So I think I give them a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that's the poise that they had, and just kind of the like, hey, we know you're Salisbury, but we're still going to try to punch you in the face anyway, really was the impressive thing about this Barry team. Now I want to talk about Salisbury going forward. Watching this game, February 2nd, that we're talking about here, you know, we're not talking about a game that's in March or April. We're talking about a game that's the first week of February. Does it change your perception of how good Salisbury can be this year? And I'm going to share with everyone here a joke I made on the Inside the Cross Slack channel, which I wish we could just sell access to that, because that's more entertaining than some of the content we put out on the website. I joked, this is going to be an interesting footnote on the game story when Salisbury wins the national championship. Kind of tongue-in-cheek comment about just how, you know, no matter what happens, Salisbury always seems to be there in the end. Kyle, I'm going to throw it over to you first. Given this, are your expectations for the Seagulls drastically different right now?
Are you asking me to admit what I said when you put that in the Slack channel? Is that what we're doing?
Sure, go ahead.
I said I don't think this Salisbury team is going to win the title. I don't think it's going to happen, because it wasn't. I don't think the result of the game was them taking them. Yes, go ahead.
Saying this team isn't going to win the title is a really, really high bar. You mean they're not going to be a title contender whatsoever?
No, I said they're not going to win the title.
Okay.
Technically what I said. And listen, I think that because I didn't see the crazy athleticism, the ability to even clear the ball well, that Salisbury is kind of prided on. You know, that they do the little stuff well. That's why Salisbury's so good. You know, they do have a lot of offensive talent, and that kind of, you know, overshadows maybe some of the other aspects of their game. They also have great defensive talent, obviously, in this game. If you got a goalie with 17 saves, you're doing something right. You know, I just think I wasn't blown away. And yes, it could have been a fluke. I totally admit that. But how much growth are you going to have from February 2nd to Memorial Day? You know, and everyone knows that Salisbury's path to the championship is, let's be real, easier than a lot of other teams say, oh, I don't know, up here, that have to, you know, take blood off each other to get to the championship. I think that they still have a really good chance of getting to the championship game or even the Final Four. I don't think that's not what I'm saying. I just don't know if I see, like, Killer Instinct definitely going to win from the Gulls. And if that's bulletin board material, like, so be it.
That's too hard to tell from one 60-minute game. I think, you know, I'm as guilty of it as anyone as being hard on Salisbury, and that's probably just my, you know, playing them for 4 years and only being them one time bias. But you can't – I don't think it's fair to sit here and say that, you know, this is going to be a great representation of what their season's going to be. You have no idea. Besides the fact that it's their first game, everyone's going to get Salisbury's best games. They're going to have a target on their back, not to bring up the Super Bowl again, but this is Barry's Super Bowl. You know, if they can even come within two against Salisbury, that's a huge feat for them. So, and Salisbury, who knows, maybe looking ahead, but you throw the new rules in, the shot clock, the clearing, all the other things considering, you know, it's one game. They won. You know, no one's going to look back and say, oh, remember when Salisbury almost lost to Barry on February 2nd or whatever it was? So, you know, it's not a good enough indication of anything moving forward. If I had to put money down, they're going to be in the top five all season. I don't think anything's going to change. But we'll find out more. You know, their schedule only gets harder. Sort of, you know, not necessarily what Kyle said. It's not the it's not the North, and it's not, you know, the Amherst Tufts and these teams that are playing the same conference. It's not the NESCAC, but, you know, they play Lynchburg next week. They play Gettysburg the week after that. They have to play some of the best teams in the country. So I think in 3 weeks it'll be a much easier – there'll be a much more clear answer than what we can sort of speculate now.
It's well, you weren't impressed. You weren't impressed.
No, I was not impressed. And this might go against what I said earlier, but – I think it was a really good balance of Salisbury not being as good as we thought they were and Barry being good. I don't think it was like Salisbury just didn't show up. I think that they aren't as talented as they have been in the past. And I think Barry is also better. You know, I think it's sort of like a 60-40 thing. You know, if this was another team in the past, Salisbury's just kind of cakewalked whoever they've played in the first one. So who knows? Maybe this is an eye opener for them. But no, I don't think this is the same Salisbury team we saw last year. No doubt. You can't lose what they lost on defense and have the same team. And you can't expect your goalie to make 17 saves every week.
It's an amazing standard that we hold this program to, where we're talking this long about a win that they just had.
No doubt.
So, I mean, that's just pretty incredible in its own right. Granted, it's also like one of the only games that's going on this weekend, so there's not a lot of other live action to talk about. So, you know, great news for Barry that, you know, scheduling this early game, it's a lot of focus on them. To me, though, you know, Kyle, I 100% agree with your point about the North, and watching this game only affirms my suspicions that, you know, Salisbury is not as good as several teams in the North. So if they get to the championship game, they're going to have an uphill battle to win that championship game. Still going to be decided, you know, I think how good the other teams in the South are. We're going to see some of them this weekend, you know, whether it's York, whether it's W&L, whether it's Gettysburg. You know, I'm still curious how difficult Salisbury's path is going to be. The one thing, though, is I do think this takes away a little of the mystique that Salisbury is going to have week in and week out. I would love to see a big response from them over these next few weeks where they have some really big games because, you know, last year they had that losing skid early in the season, but I still think it was kind of everyone went into Salisbury and was still a little bit scared to play them, even though they were, you know, quote unquote, having a down year. I think combined with kind of that, the way that they started this game and just the way that, you know, like I said, I thought physically they just didn't really feel that imposing. If Salisbury loses a few games here, I think they're going to lose some of that mystique and people aren't going to be scared of them. And I think that's half the reason that Salisbury has been so good, is just this tradition behind them has made every team that's lining up against them just kind of like grip their stick a little bit tighter and be a little more fearful of what's going to happen. So if we start to see that chip away, it might be a long year. But what I want to transition this to right now, Kyle, is, and I'm asking this because you watch the game most closely, there's a lot of failed clears. Would you say that's the new rules? Would you say that's February rust? Would you say it's anything in particular?
I think it's some of it's a little just carelessness, right? And I think a lot of it was not being prepared for, kind of Barry dropped in like a zone ride and a hard ride at times. But the zone ride is going to prevent a lot of those passes that normally got through, right? Because the timer is going to put a little more pressure on the ball carrier to get that ball out to the midfielder or even the pole that's kind of running up the sideline that's usually wide open on everything. I think what's interesting is, you know, I watched this game, watched a bunch of D1 games, and D1 teams, you know, combat that the way that you'd expect them to, which is they ran a midfielder back and he just carried. You know, I don't think that D3 has a ton of teams that have that kind of piece, that super fast guy, because that super fast guy is either playing attack or he's playing offensive midfield. They're not bringing that guy back to clear it. So they do have to rely a little bit more on medium to long range passing. And that is something that traditionally is tough for a lot of D3 teams. And I think, but I'm going to give a lot of credit to the ride of both teams, because there was an adjustment period of them being like, okay, well, the goalie, you know, has the ball, he's looking for the outlet, but then the other team would drop immediately into that kind of three-quarter zone ride above the restraining line, and had the other players had trouble getting the ball up and over. So I think that's something to watch. I think you'll see a lot of teams, especially the higher caliber D3 teams, adjust really quickly. But I think that's going to be a problem for a fair amount of teams in D3 and not as much in D1 as I anticipated going into the season, for sure.
Moving on, you know, this is still kind of in that season preview mode. Like I said, we just had, you know, a handful of games to open up this past weekend. We got some big ones that we're going to talk about here in a few minutes coming up this weekend. I wanted to go through our top 10 from our media poll votes. And just to explain to all the listeners out there, we are now doing a Division 3 media poll. It's going to be the three of us here, plus Ken Stockman, who does our weekly D3 notebook on InsideTheCross.com, plus about 12 sports information directors scattered, you know, through different conferences, scattered geographically, people who really see the sport week in, week out, and kind of know all the details of all the teams that they're facing. So the most comprehensive poll that Division III lacrosse has ever had. We're going to be unveiling it on Wednesdays throughout the season, different than, you know, kind of that normal Monday flow of all the polls that come out. We want to put it out on Wednesday so more people can see it, more people get attention to it, so it's not kind of drowned out in all the stuff that comes out on Monday mornings. And also as a way to just kind of highlight all the great midweek stuff that happens in Division III lacrosse. So that's going to start next week, the in-season version of that. We already have a preseason poll that you can find on InsideTheCross.com. And we're going to go through our top 10s right now. I'll start just to kick it off. I have Wesleyan number one, which I think most people in the poll do, besides a small percentage who had Salisbury as number one. Salisbury number two, Tufts, RIT, Amherst, Gettysburg, WNL, York, Cabrini, and then Denison. Josh, your top 10, anything kind of really stick out as vastly different for you?
A little bit. I have number one Wesleyan, number two Salisbury. I'm really high on Gettysburg this year. With what they return, Wyckoff on defense, some of the guys on offense, they've gotten a few transfers, notably Griffin Galinas, who was a Michigan commit, is now going to be suiting up for the Bullets. I'm really high on Gettysburg. I think this is their year to do it. to represent the South at least and get to Foxborough, or Philly, I guess it is, right? Number four, Tufts. Number five, Amherst. Number six, RIT. Number seven, York. York scrimmaged Bucknell a week or two ago. Unofficial score was 6-3, York over Division I Bucknell. So, you know, take it for what it's worth. Eight, WNL. We'll get to see York WNL this weekend. Nine, Denison. And 10, I have Cabrini.
Kyle, what do you got up there in the North?
Pretty interesting differences. I have Wesleyan 1, Salisbury 2. I got RIT pretty high, probably like too high. You know, it's funny with all these votes. Like, I think I'm voting in three polls now, and now all I do is second guess when I go back and look through stuff. But I have Tufts at number 4, Amherst at number 5, really high on Amherst. I think Evan Wolf is going to have a huge, huge year for them. I have York at 6. Lynchburg at 7. I know Josh would love that. Yeah. I have Gettysburg at 8. I probably should move Gettysburg up. Then I have Cabrini at 9. And I have Dickinson at 10.
Interesting. So. Your Lynchburg very high up there in the poll. I like it. It's bold.
Valid.
My
if I do say so myself.
My dilemma was that trio of Tufts, RIT, and Amherst. You know, I think you can basically interchange any of the three of them, and it's a really solid pick, 3, 4, or 5. You know, I think the top five, besides Josh with the outlier of Gettysburg there, you know, the top 5 or 6, I think, is pretty clear who are the top 6 in the country right now. It's just kind of a matter of your personal preference from there. Now, actually, the question now becomes, we saw the Salisbury-Barry game. Would you revote where Salisbury is given this result? Josh, I'll start with you. We all had him at number 2, you know, Wesleyan 1, Salisbury 2.
I'd like to, sure, but they won, and it's the first game of the season. You can't drop them because of a loss. If someone else said, I'm going to talk myself in circles. No, I would not change where they are right now. If they went to overtime, maybe, or something, but they controlled the game from the third quarter on, I think, in my opinion, and I think they still are deserving of that number 2 spot regardless.
Kyle?
I mean, the question is, do you think they're the number 2 team in the nation after that result? Yes, they won. And no, I don't. So, yes, I would change where I put them, but not by much. Like, I wouldn't throw them out of the top 10. I wouldn't even throw them out of the top 5. Like, maybe they go to 5 or 4 or 3. So, but yes, I would move them because that did not look like the second best team in the nation. You cannot tell me that it did. You know, that's what we're going off of. And it's unfair. That's unfair. But given the nature of the question, you know, and where we're actually ranking them, saying they're the second best team in the nation, I did not see that. So, yes, I would move them, but not too far.
Yeah, I'm with you, Kyle. I'd put them 3 or 4 right now. You know, I would just think that if they played tomorrow, this is a bad comparison because of the whole NESCAC thing, but if those two teams lined up, Tufts would win.
They're playing a game on February 2nd, and the Centennial Conference starts practice on February 1st. So again, let's just, you know, to put it all in perspective of where we are right now. And I get it's an unfair question, and I get it. But at the same time, like, literally, there are teams who have not started practice, and we're holding stock in this game. But whatever, it doesn't matter. This is what we're here to do. We're here to speculate, so it's fine.
The speculation, though, can kind of have a little more backing behind it after this weekend, because there are two games that are pretty significant games down here in the South. Kyle, we're going to have to make you a South convert for the next 3 weeks or so until it really gets going up there. So apologies for that. But the first game that we want to talk about is WNL versus York College. This is a really big game. This is a huge game. This is two teams that are clearly top 10 teams. You know, where you have them from within there is up for some debate, but these are two top 10 teams that I think really, even considering the way that they played last year, I think everyone's expecting an elevated level of play from them heading into this year. Josh, you already talked about York's result against Bucknell. You know, they've got an All-American coming back in Brendan McGrath, you know, from injury last year, every indication is he's, you know, really good to go, really ready to see some action and get out there. But you've got a WNL team that has the best player in Division III lacrosse, potentially, in A.J. Witherell, the senior out of Wilmington, Delaware. So this is pretty much a heavyweight matchup here in February. Josh, what's your thoughts and your prediction?
It's going to be a really, really awesome game. I genuinely believe that. You're right, A.J. Witherell, I think, is the best player in Division III lacrosse right now. North, South, Wolf from Amherst is probably in that conversation as well. But, you know, he'll be the first one we get to see this weekend. You know, York brings back Pfeiffer, Davis. They had a freshman who put up 64 points. And McGrath, who was, you know, a player of the year candidate before he got hurt, comes back as well. And all signs are pointing that he's as healthy as he's ever been and going to be, you know, contributing at a similar level. You know, they lose Fiorino, who was an All-American defenseman. Matt Witcher, who was a do-it-all guy. Coach Childs has talked about how, you know, he's one of the best leaders he's ever coached. So it's certainly going to be a different York team, but I think they bring enough pieces back. Coach Childs is, as I've said multiple times, I think is the one of the best coaches in all of college lacrosse. You know, so it's really going to be, I'm much more familiar with York than I am with WNL. But when you bring Witherell, you know, the way WNL's season ended last year, making a run but not quite getting as far as they wanted, I think it's going to be an awesome game. If I had to pick, I think York wins. I think having the advantage at home, you know, is big. WNL coming, you know, it's about a six-hour ride. Take it for what it's worth. But I think that York prevails. But I think it's going to be an awesome game. I don't expect there to be more than a two-goal disparity.
Kyle, what's your thoughts on this one?
I think it's a really good challenge for both teams. I think that if Washington and Lee wins, it's an upset, right? Like, we're in that camp. Like, we think that's a possibility, though?
I don't know if it's an upset. I think to the, you know, maybe. The more I think about it, I think teams are really familiar with York over the past 3 years, and WNL has achieved at a very similar level. They haven't sort of punched their way through yet, haven't sort of broke through the ceiling. So, yeah, you could. I mean, from a just where the media poll lies, you could say it's an upset, them being ranked higher than or lower than York, yeah.
I mean, I would say, like, Washington and Lee, if they didn't have an already storied, like, history of D3 success, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I would say they're the York of right now. And it's kind of like a very, if it's very, the game's very interesting if you look at it that way, that Washington Lee is ready to break through the ceiling there and kind of make their presence known. And it could be, you know, these early games are wild. We just saw that. I think, you know, the other game we didn't talk about was Hendricks beating Centenary 29-1, which is the bad side of the shot clock. But I actually expect both these teams to be really prepared. I don't think it's going to be a crazy blowout. I think it's going to be really close. If Lynchburg-Salisbury wasn't playing on the same day, it would be game of the weekend. But I'm always impressed with how York lines up. You know, they always know where they're supposed to go. They're run very much like a D1 team as opposed to a D3 team.
This is a game that WNL lost last year 10-4. So they also probably have a little chip on their shoulder. And what's so exciting is just looking at these teams on the inside lacrosse scoreboard is the next three to 5 weeks, a lot of top 10, top 20 matchups going on. I know we'll dive deeper on that later possibly. But, I mean, to start out the season, sort of on the opposite end of D1, Kyle, you were talking about your podcast this morning, like how cool would it be to see a UVA Syracuse really early in the game? You get a lot of that in Division III early and often.
That's why you live the D3 life. It's fun.
That's right. But I have a different take than both you guys on this game. I think it's pretty much as close to a 50-50 matchup as you can get. You know, as close to a two really good programs that are elite level that are pretty evenly matched. So I don't really buy it being an upset either way. I think WNL wins this one. The reason being, you mentioned some of the defensive losses for York. They're going to be starting a young goaltender. They're going to be replacing a goaltender who, you know, Landry Marshall had a lot of minutes there at York, and he was a really key piece of their run. And WNL just has, you know, AJ Witherell, but too much depth of offense for a defense that's still kind of working itself and finding itself. So for that reason, I'm going with W&L. Win a game, but a very close game, you know, a 2-3 goal result up there in York. And I'm planning to go up there to York, so Coach Childs will call me an idiot if he thinks that's the case. But I'll be up there in attendance covering that game for Inside Lacrosse. Moving on to, Kyle, you already mentioned it, the other big game of the weekend, which in my opinion takes a backseat to the W&L York game that we just talked about. But the guy sitting across from me here at this table probably has something else to say about that, and that's Salisbury-Lynchburg. Josh, you know a lot more about the Lynchburg program than most people, being an alum of that program. What are you looking to get out of this game?
You know, this is a game where my senior year, we beat Salisbury, and it was the first time we'd beaten them. That was 2013 in 10 years. You know, this is a game, Lynchburg, every single year, as far as I can go back, Lynchburg has played Salisbury for the first game of the year. Yeah, it's the way Coach Kadelka wants it. You want to play the, you want to be the best. You got to play the best. It's a great way to evaluate where you are from the get go, right from the jump off. So, I think this is a Lynchburg team that learned a lot last year. They had struggles during the regular season. They made a run in the ODAC tournament, won the ODAC championship, made it to the NCAA tournament, had a great game against Dickinson, ended up getting knocked out. But they returned so much. I think, you know, alumni, we've been talking about this group of kids who are now seniors for a long time, specifically on the attack. Evan Lombardo, Logan Adams, you bring back Trammell Robinson, Andrew Thomas suffered a strange injury throughout the season. He's going to be back. So you have four guys who are major contributors coming back. Kevin Rogers is a midfielder who's sort of their go-to guy. I did play, if that's what you want to call it, in the alumni game this past fall. They have some really great young talent on this team. I'm really excited about some of the guys they have on defense as well. Number 43, I'm blanking on his name right now. Matt Meadows, number 3, is a Lynchburg guy. He's come back. You know, he's been great for them between the lines. Nick Willerts is a Mount Joe kid. He's been playing awesome as a short stick D middy. They're just deep, and I think they have a ton of different options on offense. You know, if they can win a solid percentage of the faceoff X, they're going to be a really tough team to sort of scout. And they play a gauntlet of a schedule. You know, they play Salisbury, F&M. You know, last year their first four games were Salisbury, F&M, Cabrini, York. You know, this year I know they get a chance to play Wesleyan. So I'm really high as I may have ever been on a Lynchburg team, just from, you know, what I've heard coming out of camp, so to speak, there. So, you know, bias aside, I think, you know, with Salisbury, the way they looked last year, I think this is one I expect the Hornets to take at home in Lynchburg. But I expect them to win every week, so it's nothing different for me.
Of course, I think every podcast we've ever recorded, you mentioned that Lynchburg win that you were a part of when you played against Salisbury your senior year.
People don't forget, man. It was a huge deal. I remember going to a banquet the night before, and we were talking about the 2003 team, and that was the last team that had beaten Salisbury. And then, you know, we came out, and it was an amazing game. I'll shout out Vin Kern, scored a goal as time expired. It was snowing. It was a 1 o'clock game on a Saturday. I mean, that's what we talk about the D3 life. That's a memory I'll never forget. But, you know, keeping it in 2019, you know, it's a different team than that 2013 team. And I think that these guys have the legs, the depth, and they have an advantage of watching Salisbury play last week, where on the other hand, you know, this is Lynchburg's first game. So I think it's going to be an amazing game. There's no doubt it's going to be, you know, one or two goal game. I expect it to come down to the end. You know, Lynchburg without CJ Santoro, who had been a staple there for a little while in the goal. You know, we'll see who gets in the goal for them. But I think it's going to be an amazing game.
Kyle, you're pretty high on Lynchburg. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard to top any sort of Lynchburg fandom that Josh might have. But I can guarantee you that Lynchburg team watched that Salisbury game, and a lot of them are sitting at home rocking back in a chair waiting for Saturday. You know, because it's a great opportunity for the program, you know, to take them down. And they look weak. You know, I hate to keep harping on it, but they look beatable. And especially for a team like Lynchburg, not just because of their pedigree, but because of the way they're coached. You know, I've heard stories about Kadelka back when he was a goalie in the MLL in the first, like, couple years the MLL existed. You know what I mean? Like, he's a legend, and he's kind of trying to make that program into a legendary program. And what better step than to pull off another upset of Salisbury?
Apparently, I'm the outlier on this podcast this week, but everything I said about Salisbury earlier about, you know, they can't go on a losing streak because then the mystique of the Seagulls is going to be kind of chipped away and teams are going to be coming at them. I think that's the very reason why they come to this game and they win this weekend. I don't think you can go and look Jim Berkman in the eyes after that game against Barry. Whatever he said in the locker room, which I don't know what he said, whatever he's going to be saying at practice this week, I don't know you can look at him and not just be motivated to be a lot better than you were that weekend. I think they're going to come out. They're going to just, you know, they felt like they were probably physically, you know, beaten up by Barry a little bit. And that is not going to sit well for Salisbury. I think they're going to come out on fire against Lynchburg and win this game.
I mean, it wouldn't be a surprise to anyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's probably the expectation. I think it's going to be an amazing game. One, I certainly will have the I'll give Joe Hutzler a shout-out, who runs LHSN, Lynchburg Hornets Sports Network. If you're looking for a really high-quality live stream, Lynchburg is in the upper echelon of, you know, not only D1, D3. I mean, they do an amazing job with different camera angles and everything. So if you're looking for a great one to watch, make sure you're checking out the Lynchburg Athletics website for that link.
I also got to say that after this podcast comes out, I will never be able to look Jim Berkman in the eye. So that's not an option for me. But I mean, you're not wrong. You know, none of these points are wrong. It's just conjecture leading up to what we anticipate to be a great game.
Exactly. I just think that the worst thing in the world is to be the team that plays Salisbury after a disappointing outing. And so for the Hornets, Josh, sorry about that. Moving on.
I look forward to our podcast next week.
Next week will be a fun one. And, you know, we'll keep putting this out on Wednesdays and keep it going. Real quick before we get into an interview with Chris Barrett, the coach at Belmont Abbey. They had a win against Tampa. They had a 6-goal fourth quarter to beat the number 6 team in the country, the Tampa Spartans, a very, very talented team. Belmont Abbey is a very talented team in its own right that is going to be looking for an NCAA tournament berth. Check out the D2 scoreboard for the schedule for this coming weekend. Big game to watch is Lenoir Ryan versus Limestone. You know, this is a game of two of the teams that are, you know, picked to be the top teams in the South. Limestone is a team that in our Inside the Cross Face-Off yearbook rankings, you know, I kind of put them together and I had Limestone a lot higher than other places because I think this is going to be, you know, certainly a rebuild from a disappointing season last year. Lenoir Ryan is right up there with them. This is kind of the battle for, in my opinion, for South supremacy in Division II lacrosse.
We welcome Belmont Abbey coach Chris Barrett to the podcast. Belmont Abbey coming off a season opening victory, beating Tampa 13-9, a game played in Savannah, Georgia this past weekend. Coach, Liam Osborne had 7 goals, but this was just a really big team victory for you guys. What's your outlook after that win?
Well, we, one of the things we try to do here is take it one game at a time. You know, we respect every opponent. We certainly had a ton of respect for Tampa going into this game. But we are, we're definitely excited. We're excited to get home with the win. But really all we're focusing on now is Catawba. So we try to keep that one game mentality at a time. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves. We do understand that this was a big one for us because we do expect Tampa to have an excellent season. They are very, very talented, well-coached team. We really battled with them this past weekend. It's obviously it was nerve-wracking. Feb 2nd, going into a game, you're playing the number 6 ranked team in the country. You're after only a few weeks of practice, so as a coach, you're not sure if you're ready. You're not sure if you got everything in, you know, those kind of things. But I was, I did felt that we were mentally prepared and we knew what we were up against. We just had to go out there and execute. And for the fourth quarter, we really, really got that done. It was a battle for the first 3 quarters, but we stayed within ourselves. We didn't get we didn't have a ton of anxiety. We were able to battle back multiple times in the game and be successful. And we just stuck to the game plan the whole entire time and got it done. So I was really, really happy. Really excited for the boys to be able to battle back, stay together and get that one done. Cause we definitely had adversity all day. I mean, they are, like I said, they're an excellent team. They're a tough cover, especially defensively. And they make you earn everything you get offensively. So, it was a great, great team win and one that I hope we can really build off of and keep this thing going.
Liam Osborne obviously had a special day, 7 goals. It's something he's done for you for a few years now, but what can you say about his performance putting in such a big game against such a big opponent?
You know, Liam has done such a great job over now the 4 years that he's been here. He's a team captain. Obviously, he was an All-American last year, conference offensive player of the year, co-offensive player of the year. But Liam, everything Liam earns and gets, he deserves. You know what Liam did when we got back from the Tampa game? We got back at 10:30 at night. You know what Liam did that night? He went to the gym. That's who Liam is. You know, and to have a senior captain who does those kind of things, it's so valuable for the younger guys to see that. You know, I think, you know, he could have easily went home and relaxed and bragged about his 7 goals, but he went to the gym and kept working because he knows we got another one coming up. But Liam is a special, special player. He's an excellent captain. The thing that I can say about him now as a senior is you can tell the game's slowing down for him. You know, he's prepared. He doesn't have that anxiety. He's not gripping his stick too tight. He plays within himself. He plays within the offense. He plays within the scheme. And honestly, a lot of, you know, yeah, Liam had 7 goals, but it took the other 5 guys doing the right things for him to get the 7 goals. So it was a real big team effort, and Liam just kind of was the last man at the end of the chain on that, 7 times, I guess, so to speak. But, you know, at one point he definitely, was putting us on his back and keeping us in the game. So he's a big part of what we're doing here, and will be for the remainder of the year.
Like you said, for 3 quarters, this was a battle, and Tampa went into the 4th quarter with a 9-7 lead. What does it say maybe about this team's toughness, this team's resolve that, you know, this is a really, really talented team you just played. They had a lead going into the 4th quarter. It's February 2nd. Could have easily went the other way, but instead you guys rattle off a 6-goal 4th quarter. That really has to say a lot about what your squad can do.
Yeah, we talked a lot about at halftime and even after the 3rd quarter. And I mean, if you were following the game, which I know there was no live stream, but if you're following the live stats, you realize the goals were coming in bunches, both ways. You know, and so the message to the team, 5-4 at halftime, I literally looked at them. The first thing I said to them, I said, if someone came to my office on Monday morning and told me that it's going to be 5-4 at halftime, either way, I would have signed up for it. I was like, and I looked them in the eyes. I said, look, I know you don't feel like you played your best half of lacrosse and we're only down 1. So that's a positive. And then same thing at the end of the 3rd quarter. We were down 2, but we felt like we were still right there in that game, a couple plays here and there. So we talked a lot about just sticking to the game plan, doing what we do, and the results will come. And that's exactly what we did. So these guys are believing in one another. They're believing in their coaching staff. I got 3 great, outstanding assistants that had us well prepared on both sides of the ball and in our special teams. So I think the fact that, you know, we put them in some spots to be successful only gains their trust that much more within their teammates and their coaching staff. And I think we learned a valuable lesson game 1 and being on the positive side of it, you know, in that regard. So really excited for this weekend and for the future with this group. Like I said, they stick together, and this is kind of who this group is. You know, it's a 60-minute game. They understand that. And, you know, lacrosse is a game that if you're down 2 or 3, you can make that up in 2-3 minutes. So they understand that. They know that they got to play for 60 minutes. They did that, and we're able to come out successful this weekend.
When you look at this game, you know, you had Colin Grippo, who had a hat trick. You had Bryce Gifford, you know, making his first start in net for you guys, making 18 saves. You had a defenseman who had 3 cost turnovers. Did you feel like everything was working in every phase of the field for you guys?
I would say, you know, I felt good about things, especially, you know, the fourth quarter really just broke our way. You know, we had a lot of things that, you know, we were finishing our shots, picking up timely ground balls. I think one of the biggest plays of the game, and, if you know, you can tell by the stats, you know, Tampa has an excellent faceoff guy. Ross Dickerson is probably one of the best in the country we're going to go up against. But we had a really big, timely, one of our five faceoff wins in the fourth quarter after scoring a couple goals to get us possession. I think it was around the six-minute mark. And that that was really, really big. So, you know, I give credit to our faceoff guys. I mean, we're getting pounded at the X all day. He's really quick to clamp and get it out. He's an excellent faceoff guy, excellent player. But the fact that these guys didn't, you know, just kind of buckle, or we never, you know, gave up. They knew that, hey, this next one is just as important as the previous, however many there were. Picked up a timely ground ball, got that ball, and really were able to bleed some clock, you know, with the shot clock now and those kind of things. That was huge. And I was really impressed with those guys because they were up against it. You know, they were up against one of the best faceoff guys in the country at our level. And to really be able to stick with that grind, and then honestly coming up with that big ground ball there was one of the biggest plays of the game. So I was really impressed with the you know, their mentality of sticking with it, and, you know, next play mentality. We talk a lot about that next play mentality. I've never seen a lacrosse game played perfectly. There's always going to be mistakes, errors, missed passes, missed ground balls. That's the game of lacrosse. It's all about making that next play, and I think these guys really had that mentality this past weekend, and it showed, and we got it done.
New rules, first time kind of in live action against a different opponent, you know, in a game that meant something. What was your takeaway? Did it really have much of an impact on the game, and just kind of any initial first impressions?
I loved it. I really did. And here's one impression, you know. Let's say you're down 1-2 minutes to go in the game. I think at that time, most people are maybe pulling a goalie out of the cage, you double team, and you're doing those kind of things. Well, now with the shot clock error, we know, you know, without a rebound, there's a chance we're getting the ball back with 40 seconds to go. And that's enough time to kind of put together an offensive segment and hopefully get a good shot on goal. So I think it takes a little bit of the panic away. As far as, hey, this team can hold on to the ball for a really long time here, we might be in trouble. You know, as to, hey, if we play some good defense here, we get a great stop, we're going to have the ball with this X amount of time left, and we can make something happen. I love that. I also think, you know, you can't play, you know, you can't hold the ball for 4 minutes, you know, stand up top in an umbrella set with your three middies and pass it back and forth any longer. It makes you play the game of lacrosse. It makes it fast. I think the fans enjoy it. I know we're enjoying it, but and I'll be honest, I'm not sure I was a proponent of the shot clock a couple years ago. And then, you know, I've kind of really warmed up to it and seen what it's going to do for the game. And I'm a huge fan now, huge fan. And I think I'd be telling you that if I lost 13-9 as well. I think it's just going to make for more exciting game. There's going to be less standing around on the field and, you know, just holding, choking onto the ball and those kind of things. So I think it's an exciting time for our game right now. I really do.
Coach, my last question for you is, you know, February 2nd, you scheduled a top 10 opponent in your first game. What's some of the reasoning behind that, and how does that kind of shape your season that you have to start with, you know, such a bad? I know obviously you guys are going to prepare no matter if it was, you know, the last team in Division II or the first team in Division II, but how does that shape your mentality if, you know, knowing you have this such big game with not a lot of time to prepare?
Yeah, we have a lot of big goals around here on campus, and, you know, one of them we accomplished last year by, you know, becoming conference champion. And we understand now that by doing that, our target is on our back is that much bigger. But we have larger goals than that. And that's when, you know, one of those is to break into the NCAA tournament. And we understand that in order to do that, you got to play good teams. You got to have your strength of schedule. You got to play these teams. So when we were putting together the schedule outside of our conference games, which, you know, you got to play those conference games, and we have one hell of a conference as it is, we were trying to pick opponents that we felt like could finish over 500. And those are the opponents we tried to, you know, look, it's not an exact science. Sometimes maybe you're going to get it right, you're going to get it wrong, but we wanted to put our best foot forward and make sure we were playing teams that we felt like, you know, could finish 500 at the end of the season. It just so happened that Feb 2nd worked out both for both of us, Tampa and Belmont Abbey, and you know, so we played it. So we're not going to shy away from those kind of games, whether it's February or whether it's April. And we knew that this was, you know, we want to be one of those teams in the NCAAs. Tampa's been one of those teams in the NCAAs, so we felt like that was a good measuring stick, especially on February 2nd. Coming out of there one way or the other, win or a loss, I felt like we could learn a lot about who we are and where we wanted to go this year, and I feel like we accomplished that.
I am at Matt Kinnear. Josh, how can they get you?
At Josh Davey 5.
And Kyle?
And you can find me at the Kyle Devitt, KYLEDEVITTE.
If you like this podcast, please, you know, leave a comment on iTunes. Tell us how much you like it. Reach out to any of us individually. Tell us some feedback, anything you want to see from us as we get through this year. We're going to have the full podcast lineup. Monday, we're going to have the news podcast with Quentin Terry. Tuesday, In the Crease, Dan Ayburn and Kyle Devitt are going to be giving us that. Wednesday is going to be this D2, D3 podcast. Thursdays are going to rotate between NLL, and then as we get deeper into the spring, some high school lacrosse, and then Friday, D-Fly and Dixie with the weekend preview podcast. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you next week.
This is the Division 2, Division 3 podcast.